WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss. Certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here. Sunday morning. Market, stock market all-time highs. I'm your host, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning. Here with me, Ryan Ealy, Luke Moss on the video today. Producer Luke here in the studio filming. And we are live here, August 6th, 2017, ready to talk about the world. Stocks at all-time highs. But something doesn't feel right, does it? And we're going to talk about the reasons and the solutions for this angst that I know that you're feeling. And I know that you're feeling this way because I continue to see it and hear it from families that we talk about, that I talk to every day, every week. And it's the pulse of America that is, it still has this feeling of angst. It's not a euphoria. It's not like 1999. When everyone's jumping into internet stocks thinking they're going to retire super early because stocks go up 25% a year. That's not the feeling today. Yes, we big jobs number this week. Jobs number 209,000 jobs for July. The unemployment rate down 4.3%. It's a 16-year low for the job market as far as the unemployment rate. We want that number to be at a low. But it still doesn't feel right. So the market, though, itself, all-time highs, does it feel like the market is at an all-time high? I would ask you to answer that. And I bet you say, well, I don't know. It doesn't feel that way. So does it feel like the market is at an all-time high? Or does it feel like skepticism is at an all-time high? So as the Dow sits at over now 22,000 on the a little bit more than 22,000. So from the conversations that I have had lately with investors, skepticism is the one that's winning the race. Skepticism is the one that it feels like is at an all-time high. So Washington isn't coming to the table with anything new. The Fed isn't coming to the table with anything new. The latest job report we just talked about shows that even though we keep adding jobs to this economy, again, another 209,000 for the past month, wages still aren't rising. So we're stuck at that same 2.5% wage growth rate that we're confounded by. We seem to can't get out of. And that same 2.5% growth rate in wages alone, that goes all the way back to 2013. If you look at chart at wage growth, we have been stuck at this same low speed for a very long time. So as humans, and note the word humans, not investors. So as people, we expect something. We're always expecting something to happen. We expect things to either get better or things to get worse. And when we're subject to this slow growth malaise, day after day, week after week, month after month, year after year, I call this the 39 miles per hour economy. Humans get a little antsy, and that's where we are right now. That's where we are today. We see markets making all-time highs, but we're not seeing it, and we're not buying it. Yeah, honey, the Dow's up, but from where I sit, and this doesn't matter what profession that you're in. You could be a lawyer or a doctor. You could be selling something. You could be selling software, selling soft goods. You could sell in shoes. It doesn't matter. It doesn't seem like business at work is the best it's ever been. Again, stock market best it's ever been. Is your business the best it's ever been? I doubt you say, honey, this is the best things have ever been. So it's this disconnect between how we see the real world economy versus what we see on the nightly news. If you still watch the nightly news, hopefully you listen to the nightly news here on WSB Radio or the evening news, and you need a little bit of traffic weather with your news. So versus the disconnect here, real world economy versus the stock market. And that's where we invest in the real world to harness the collective power of the economy. That's why we invest to begin with. That's the whole reason we're doing this. But all of this disconnect, that's what makes us a little bit skeptical, or maybe a lot skeptical, suspect, uncomfortable. And I think that's the state that so many Americans are in today. Just uncomfortable with the disconnect of a great market, honey, and just an okay real-world economy. Now, enter in all the market-related catastrophes that we've both lived through. And we've lived through a bunch of this in the past 17 years. 2000, 2001, 2002, 2007, 2008, 2009. That's a lot of that period of time was spent in doldrums would be a light way to put it. You know, 2008 doesn't seem like that long ago when there was a fear that every bank in America was underwater. Wasn't that long ago. It feels like yesterday for most of us. And that uncomfortability and that sense of disconnect, that just makes us plain nervous. It makes you nervous as an investor. It makes Luke Moss nervous as he's holding his iPhone trying to film today. Good morning. So that's the conversation that I've had over this past week, really over this past month, over this past year. And the question I get is, hey, Wes, I'm nervous. What am I supposed to be doing? Now you enter in, and there's a lot to be nervous about because you enter in the months that we're headed, now that we're in August, and we're headed into September, and we're headed into October. Those historically tough months for the market, and we haven't had any correction for a very long time. The first half of 2017 was the lowest volatility month that we can remember. You've got to go back a couple decades before you can find something like that. And then the disconnect between how the economy is, where the market is, and this 39 mile per hour economy. If you haven't heard the analogy, we have had this steady growth rate of over 3% a year. Let's call it 3.1% to be exact for almost 50 straight years. Very much a straight line. Then you get to the Great Recession in 07, 08. And yes, we've recovered from that, but we've never recovered at the same pace of what we got used to for 50 years. So we were used to 3.1. We've decelerated now to 1.9. That might not sound like a lot on paper. Hey, let's round that off, Wes. Isn't that just 3-2? Is it really a big deal? Well, really, it's 3.1 to 1.9. It's a 35% reduction. If you're used to driving 60 miles per hour and you've done that for the better part of a one-day trip and all day long you've driven 60 miles an hour and you're almost home, you're 100 miles from home, and now a governor comes on your car and says, boom, 39, that's all you can go for the remainder of the trip. You're going to get antsy. You're going to get frustrated about how slow that feels relative to what you're used to. And that's where we are today. Now you enter in, what are some of the other factors that contribute to our angst in America? How about the rising cost of healthcare? I think that's one of them. And it's not just the cost of healthcare. If you really think about it, it's the wallet share that healthcare is now taking from you versus what it did 10 and 20 and 30 years ago. That wallet share partially is because of the number of procedures and tests and all the new things that have been introduced. Those have skyrocketed. It's not just the cost. How about the dual income trap? Since 1975, and this is something that doesn't ever get reported on, the Equal Credit Opportunity Act was passed in 1975. That essentially encouraged dual income households. Can you believe before that act in 1975, you're trying to go get a mortgage, husband and wife, and banks didn't have to count the wife's income? In 1975, the Equal Credit Opportunity Act essentially said, no, you got to look at both incomes here in America. And that provision was a gigantic change in family economics. And then if you look at how that's played out over the years, we have more and more dual income households than we've ever had. And what does that do? On the surface, it sounds great, but it's also created a greater risk that somebody in the household loses a job. So it's not just one person anymore, it's two people. And if it takes two to make the mortgage payment, now all of a sudden there's a higher probability that one of those two jobs goes away. We've increased housing prices. We now have people have bought in neighborhoods and the average home prices continue to accelerate. And now all of a sudden, the risk though in the economy that somebody loses that job, the family economic risk is higher than it used to be. Student loans of $1.3 trillion. that's, let's call that an anvil around the neck of so many. When you're getting started in the real world, you can take a risk going out and starting a new business, and you now have, you already have a $1,000 a month student loan payment. You're a graduate degree. You're going to go out and start a new business. You have a $2,000 a month mortgage slash student loan debt to repay. No, you're going to probably take the conservative route. So the economy itself has experienced all of these variables that have slowed us down, and it's creating this angst. And I want to talk about some of the solutions. If you're a nervous investor, and I know you are, that's the collective voice of what I've heard over the last several months, that we're going to talk about some of the ways you can think about this economy moving forward and what you should be doing as an investor. I heard from a client of mine this week, hey, Wes, it seems like these corporations are doing okay, but where is all that money going? Doesn't feel like the rest of us are participating in any of that. Again, another reason for this feeling of uneasiness and this feeling of angst. So we're going to talk through how you can think through the very emotional and mathematic, but the harder side of this is the emotional side, business of investing over time and trying to get to a place where you can stop working and stop worrying about all of this. The very worries that we think about on a daily basis when it comes to the economy and the stock market, and right now, this disconnect, seemingly disconnect between the two. Good morning, welcome to Money Matters. No, maybe I usually start on more of a positive note, but I guess we're fired up today here on Money Matters. We'll take your calls here. Phone lines opened up, 404-872-0750. That's the number here in the studio with your financial questions, whether it has to do with a pension or a lump sum or an early retirement question, or it's a 403B or a 401K or 457 or a government plan, or it's healthcare or Social Security or taxes or real estate, and you're struggling with a decision. It's family, husband, wife, you guys are talking about it. You want to just get another direction or a second opinion about that, and which way to go, then I'm happy to shed a little bit of light on that here on a Sunday morning. Just that's why we tune in to Financial Radio, and we still get the wonderful calls and questions week after week. It's the best part of Money Matters by far, and it's what we love to do here on a Sunday morning. That's why I come in here. So give us a call here in the studio. We welcome it. 404-872-0750, or if you're out of state, Texas, California, Washington State, Michigan, Pennsylvania, North Carolina, 1-800-WSB-TALK. You're listening to Money Matters with me, Wes Moss, right here on News 95.5 and AM 750 WSB.
Now back to Wes Moss with the money and investing advice you need.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning. 404-872-0750. The number here in the studio. We'll start with Thomas, joins us from Canton. Thomas, good morning. What's going on? How can I help?
Good morning, Wes. Really enjoy your show and appreciate your thoughts on a Sunday morning.
Thanks, man. What's going on? How can I help?
Wes, I'm a individual stock investor, and I have got some, you know, asking some questions for me about Wells Fargo. I don't know if you've checked the news lately, but this past week, this is the second announcement that they've self-admitted on a issue of a situation where they went back in their records and they made a public announcement that we are going to go back and reimburse 500,000 customers that we wrongly charged some secondary auto insurance on their auto loans to.
Well, yeah. It's a new mess. It's like there's 570,000 people.
The second scandal.
Yeah,
in
it's just
September. They had this other scandal.
Yeah, it's really a mess, isn't it? And it's such a shame, really, because this is a company that for so long was kind of the beacon. It almost felt like it was the most. Let's call it the bank that you could almost trust the most for a lot of years, right? And Warren Buffett's a huge investor. Wells Fargo is the best of any bank, and they're still financially totally fine. And I think that when you get to be so big, and you get to be an unwieldy bank, like so many banks, quite frankly, Thomas, have become. I mean, it's hard for a CEO of a multi-billion dollar, hundreds of billion dollar bank to continue and really be on top of everything. I think that's part of what we've seen. It's not just Wells Fargo, it's a lot of these other banks. Right. So I think it's a banking issue across the board. It, you know, came up in the financial crisis, too big to fail, meaning that these banks have gotten to be so big that they're systemically important, you can't even let them fail. I don't think Wells Fargo's going anywhere, but my thought on owning a bank like this, again, I think financially they're fine. I think that it's probably, you see a dip like it dipped this week, probably a buying opportunity because I think they do clean it up. But it really, to me, it really is just kind of a sad commentary on what has happened in a lot of corporations in America. Now, on the other side of that, I do like these financials in general, Thomas, and I'm definitely an owner of the financial iShare XLF. It's an ETF. Wells Fargo is a part of that, but it also has the other big insurance companies, financial companies, banks, and I take a look the ETF XLF as another idea. You're listening to Money Matters here, WSB.
It's WSB's Money Matters with Wes Moss, certified financial planner and chief investment strategist from Atlantis Capital Investment Advisors. Wes talks to you about investing and saving for the future. Brought to you every Sunday by RBM of Atlanta, Mercedes-Benz, Sandy Springs.
Good morning. Welcome to Money Matters here on a Sunday morning where we're talking about the world that we live in, this disconnect between the market at an all-time high and the economy that just doesn't feel like it's the best that it's ever been. Feels pretty good. Feels okay, right? It's the 39-mile-per-hour economy. It's still going places, but at a frustrating pace. The 39-mile, I like that. I think we're going to start using that. So good morning. Welcome to Money Matters. I'm your host here, Wes Moss, here every Sunday morning from 9 until 11. And we are live to take your calls and your questions. So if you're just popped in the car and you're headed to church, then good morning. Or maybe you already finished up church. Or a lot of folks will call and they're getting ready to go to church, which sounds wonderful on a Sunday morning. Now, we're here in the studio and we do that and it's fun and we wouldn't have it any other way. Here with Luke Moss, who's one of my four boys. He does a little bit of the filming on Sunday mornings. Ryan Ely to take your calls and your questions. So if you're headed to church or golf, and for some, church is golf. Golf is church. Or you're just going to brunch and you're headed out to hang out with the family. Or maybe you're headed to the lake or headed... I hope you're not headed back from the lake because you have a whole day left to go. But if you're up in the mountains and you're listening to WSB Radio via the WSB Radio app, then we welcome your calls and questions. So this morning, if you've been thinking about something, maybe it's just early retirement. Maybe it is you've been using some of the calculators that we have online on westmoss.com. If you go to the resources section, let me look at my actual website here. Let's under tools. So under the tools section on westmoss.com, if you've taken the happiness questionnaire, I've done a lot of research over the years about happy versus unhappy retirees and how those traits compare to each other and help lead to the potential for an early retirement. In the book, you can retire sooner than you think. 5 Money Secrets of the Happiest Retirees. So if you're in that section on the website under tools, westmoss.com, there's a happiness questionnaire. There's the 5 Money Secrets workbook, which is a totally free download and a free tool to use. There's a retirement calculator that gets very much the specifics of your financial situation that you can use. And there's a Social Security Optimizer tool that'll help you with Social Security. So there's a lot out there that you can use. And I know that it's confusing sometimes to know where to start. And that page is a good free resource to do that. So if you have questions about these areas of your life and they relate back to early retirement or a way to, if it's an investing question that you're thinking about, wow, I'm in my 50s, should I be transitioning a little bit? Am I getting nervous about markets at an all-time high? I'm worried about bonds. I'm worried about stocks. I'm worried about real estate. I'm worried about pipeline energy companies. How do I become an income investor? There's a lot to think about, particularly when you're getting closer and closer to needing the money. When you are 30, it doesn't matter if the market's correct. You want the markets to be awful. You want the next decade to be the worst decade ever for stocks if you're 30, because all you're doing, or you should be doing, is you're plowing money away every week, every 2 weeks, every month into some sort of plan. You accumulate, 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 and finally when the world heals in the future, all of a sudden things look really good and you've bought at low prices. It's very different if you're 55 and you're really thinking about, hey, honey, in the next 5 years, I'm done working. Or if you're 16, you say, I think we're done in the next couple of years. You got to be a lot more careful about how you approach your retirement. And that's what we're here to help with. So if you have questions about that, which direction to go at a fork in the road, whether it's real estate or investments or taxes or Social Security, you name it, we are here on a Sunday morning to answer those questions. The number in the studio, 404-872-0750. Again, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK in the studio. We're going to go to the phones right now. We're headed to Smyrna. Mary joins us on the line. Mary, what's going on? How can I help?
I've got a bit of an inheritance along with my own funds to invest, and it could be around $100,000. I also didn't do anything. I'm having to do my RMDs now, and last year's it's just sitting in a money market fund because I'm afraid of putting it into the market because the market keeps going up and you're not supposed to buy high, and I don't want to buy high, but it keeps going up, so I'm
right. It's frustrating, isn't it? It really is frustrating.
It is.
Welcome to the world of investing. And I think everybody listening probably has some sort of, you feel what Mary's talking about here, right? It is a frustrating position to be in. And Mary, and we think of it a lot of times in terms of, hey, the stock market is at a high. Well, to some extent, look at the bond market too. When rates are low, like they are today, that means bond prices are elevated. So it's the same story on the bond side of the equation too, right, Mary? So there's a lot to think about.
That's part of my issue. I've got a traditional IRA with over $600,000, and 50% of that is in bonds. And the bonds devaluation every month with my statement is cutting off of the increases I've gotten from the mutual funds the rest of the money is in. So I'm not happy with the bonds. So I'm just at a dilemma as to what to do.
Well, there are probably 1,000 people listening that are think of the same thing. And I know it's a really frustrating place to be. Now, a couple of thoughts moving forward. I always go back to kind of these fundamentals. And if you are taking your required minimum distribution, so that means you're probably in your 70s, is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Now, but your question though has to do with something to do with your son and some inherit. What was the initial question?
Oh no, it's just I have money to invest. I don't need my RMDs to live off of. I have a pension and the Social Security, so it's a lot of extra money I don't need, but I don't like it just sitting in a money market account either.
Enter in a problem that is, again, a decent problem to have, right? So out of all the problems that Mary could have, not quite knowing where all this extra money needs to go ranks as not the worst problem in the world. But a problem nonetheless, Mary, and that's why you're calling here on a Sunday morning. So you've been taking your required minimum distributions. Again, if you're younger and haven't heard of that, it's just when you're in America, you get to be 70 and a half and you have money in a retirement account, an IRA, not a Roth account, but a retirement account. The government says, look, you've got to take about 3.7% per year that first year out. So, and it counts towards income. They collect, the IRS collects taxes, and then you are left with, of course, the money free and clear what to do with it. In Mary's case, she's been forced to take her required minimum distributions out of an IRA, and she hasn't reinvested it because she doesn't know what to do with it. Is that about right, Mary?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I would look at it this way. You have Social Security. Do you have a pension?
I have a pension also, yes.
You do? So you really are not even living on your investment money?
No, I don't need to.
So, okay, so if you don't, And again, planning and investing always goes back to what's important for you. It's not necessarily the answer for Mary isn't necessarily the answer for somebody else. But in your case, and there's a lot of investors that find themselves in this position too, you technically don't need the $600,000 in an IRA. So
right.
Now, again, you're going to continue to have to take the required minimum distributions. It's income. You pay taxes on it. And it's moving it from one bucket to the other. It's moving from an IRA bucket into an after-tax bucket. But really, that money, because you have Social Security and you have a pension, and that covers everything you need to spend, Mary, really that money is for the next generation, isn't it?
Well, yes, I do plan on leaving it to my sons and grandchildren, but I might want to enjoy a little bit of it myself.
Okay. Well, so then the money does have, there are some things that needs to go to. So you have two goals then. You've got your family goal, which is you have sons, and then they have kids, you have grandkids, and that money is now a legacy for them. Now, you also probably are not spending as much as you could. So you should be able to enjoy it. So you should, if you want to take a trip around the world twice this year, you can afford to do it.
Well, I've already been to Barcelona and on a safari, so I'm not.
Where are you going next year?
I'm working that out with some cousins. It'll be a European trip.
Okay, so you're doing what you should be doing, and the reality is this: we go back to, is the money going to run out? And if you're taking, you're in your 70s. You're taking, let's call it 5% a year out, which is more than the required minimum distribution, then that's going to be, call it around $30,000 a year, right? Your RMD is probably a little bit less than that. So,
oh, definitely, yeah.
So you could take 30, and that's only 5% a year, and you're already in your 70s. And if it's invested, whether it's both stocks and bonds like you have today, it sounds like, and the stocks are paying dividends, then over time, you have a very, very, very low probability that the money's going to run out. So,
well, I'm not afraid of it running out. I just want to know what to do with this extra money now.
Well, so what's the percentage of this extra money? If you've got all this money, $600,000 that's in an IRA, are you talking about $20,000 that's just sitting in checking, or is it a lot more than that?
Over $100,000.
Oh, so it is a lot.
Yes.
You know what? A couple of things. So if you've already have the 600 invested, and let's say half of that is in the stock side of the world, and I'm going to talk about stocks as we go on today a little bit. I want to talk about dividend increases. And then the other side is bonds, and then you have this other 100,000. If you're really nervous about getting it to work, then it's okay just to stick the money in a CD, Mary. It's okay. And you can get the CD rates have gone higher and higher as the Fed has begun to raise interest rates a little bit. So you can get 1.5% in a CD, and you can then just patiently wait and reassess. And if stocks go back down, you can always get back into the market and find bargains at that point. But I also look at this and I say, well, there are a lot of companies that are still paying this 2.5, 3% a year in dividends. And to me, that is a safe way to have my money invested, even if we go through correction. So we're going to have a 10% correction at some point. We'll have a 15. We might even have a 20 at some point. Now, that'll probably take more of a recession, Mary, to do that, as opposed to just a garden variety correction. But you've got to get comfortable with the fact that even though we go through these undulations in markets, as long as you own companies that are still paying steady dividends, it's okay to have the value go bounce around a little bit or go lower in a temporary fashion. I think about a company like Caterpillar, and Caterpillar has 600 million shares outstanding, Mary. When they raise their dividend by a penny a share or a penny a share a quarter, which might not sound like a lot, here's the math, though. Think about one penny per quarter is really 4 cents per share. Again, still doesn't sound like a lot, but that in itself on 600 million shares is a $24 million increase to what that company pays out to investors. And that's on top of the existing dividend. Today, they pay $3 and 12 cents per share, which is almost $2 billion a year out to shareholders. So you've got to really look at these companies for what they produce on a consistent basis, as opposed to just the undulation of the price itself. We've got to go run to a break. Never enough time here on a Sunday morning. The number 404-872-0750. Mary, thank you for your call. You're tuned into Money Matters here with me, Wes Moss, on a Sunday morning, News 95.5, AM 750, WSB.
Now here's more great money and investment advice from certified financial planner Wes Moss.
Good morning. Welcome back to Money Matters. And this gets back to the question we wanted to answer in this hour. It seems like, hey, Wes, there's a boom in the market, and it's only enriching the future bonuses of senior corporate officers. This is a question I received this week. Rather than being transferred to increasing dividends and increasing money for the middle class. So what do you do? How does a little guy maximize some growth? And here's, if you really need to look under the hood and understand what's happening with dividends, you don't ever really see this happening on the surface. It's kind of this quiet issue that goes unnoticed. But take a look at a company like Chevron. And this is a company that hasn't been a great stock, but they've increased their quarterly dividend, but only to $4.32 a share from $4.28 a share. So it's only this 4 cent or 1 penny per quarter increase, and you don't really notice it, but it continues to ratchet higher. I just gave the example of Caterpillar. Caterpillar paid $2.40 in 2014, so let's go back a couple of years. Today, they pay $3.12. Again, doesn't sound like a lot, does it? But remember, this is the company that for every 1 penny increase per quarter, that's 4 cents a year on 600 million shares, that's $24 million that they pay out to shareholders on top of what they already pay. Right now, it's about $1.9 billion a year. Caterpillar, or Con Ed, as another example. Back in 2014, they paid $2.52. Today, they paid $2.76. Doesn't sound like a lot, but these are millions and millions of dollars that they are now paying out to shareholders beyond what they paid just a few years ago. And think about what has to happen in order to do that. A lot of things have to be going right in the business in order for that to happen. So these dividend increases, they go relatively unnoticed. There's no fanfare behind them, but they're a very powerful wealth building tool if you look at it over the course of time. And that's exactly what we have to do as investors. That patience is the most, one of the very most important things that we just have to remember. And I'm reminding you that here on a Sunday morning. Stay tuned, 10 o'clock hour, Money Matters straight ahead, right here, News 95.5 AM 750 WS.